Support for this episode comes from SAS. How is AI affecting how you learn, work, and socialize? And what do you need to know to make responsible use of it as a business leader, worker, and human in the world? Find out when you listen to Pondering AI, a podcast featuring candid conversations with experts from across the AI ecosystem. Pondering AI explores the impact and implications of AI, for better and for worse, with a diverse group of innovators, advocates, and data scientists. Check out Pondering AI wherever you get your podcasts. Support for the show comes from ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. You've heard the big hype around AI. The truth is, AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow is the platform that puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier, all built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/AI for people to learn more. It's on. Hi, everyone, from New York Magazine and the Vox Media Podcast Network. This is Lizzo on the French Riviera, and I can definitely play the flute. Just kidding. This is On with Kara Swisher, and I'm Kara Swisher.
And I'm Naima Raza. You are actually on the French Riviera right now. You are not Lizzo.
No.
Can you play the flute?
She can. I saw her last night play it. She played beautifully. And the reason I'm referring to it is there's a big joke by Wanda Sykes about that.
Yes.
She was amazing. She was astonishing. She played six or seven songs and just blew the top off the place. It was great. And I would say I'm here because they hire people like Lizzo and other stars to appear at this Cannes Lions event. And so there's parties everywhere and they bring in the big names.
You sound tired.
I am. I'm exhausted. I've been talking to advertisers and marketers and talking about all kinds of issues. And we taped a live pivot this afternoon.
Oh, wow.
After being on a boat for a while with Scott. So it was a lot.
Hard life.
Well,
it's exhausting. A lot of work, actually.
It is a little bit. When you're working in somewhere beautiful, you're still working.
I'm still at Martha Stewart's estate.
No, you are.
Yeah, married a gardener. It's like gold digging.
Oh, nice.
But it's green digging, you know? Yeah.
Good idea.
You are in the south of France for Cannes Lion.
You know, it's where people get together and make deals. It's essentially marketers and people who are buying advertising meet people who are selling advertising, and all the big internet companies, which are now big players in digital media, buy out the beaches here and they throw parties and there's a lot of rosé and it's just a networking event. And I do think a lot of deals get done while it's happening, but they also give out awards and it's an excuse to get together and drink together, I think, in an analog way, which is going to change dramatically, I think. I'm not sure things like this will survive the future.
You're going to put on your Apple Vision Pros
I don't know about
make
that.
Advertising deals, maybe.
I guess advertising's long been a relationship business.
Yes.
And it's increasingly not. It's a data and analytics business. And so there's all these tech companies here.
And an AI business soon.
Now, they're all worried about that, for sure. That's been the big topic here is AI.
They've been giving out some big awards. I think Anheuser-Busch InBev won one, which was ironic because of their month-long boycott of Bud Light we've seen in this country. First, they pissed off the right using a trans influencer. Then they pissed off the left.
Yeah, well, it's a bigger world, the United States of America.
It's a bigger world.
And that's what happens when you leave it.
Yes, it is. And then they also awarded Kevin Hart as Entertainment Person of the Year.
It's a party here on the French Riviera.
He also flirted with cancellation for a minute in 2018. Had to step down from the Oscars because of homophobic tweets he'd had in 2009-11. And he refused to apologize, then apologized repeatedly. Which is interesting because our topic today is about comedy and really about this new line in comedy and how comedy has changed over time. And Wanda Sykes is our guest today.
Yeah, I love Wanda Sykes. She's one of my favorites. She's not here. But I ran into a lot of the SNL cast last night, including Lorne Michaels, who created SNL. And, you know, she's one of my favorite comics of the many comics I like. And I spend a lot of time listening to comics. But she is one of the people that really is a truth teller. She's very funny. She's more left, I guess, or more liberal than other comics, but she certainly is really funny. And so I think she takes it to people, the powers that be. I just really like her.
And she has a new show called I'm an Entertainer, her new Netflix special that came out last month. Mm-hmm. And she also had the Netflix series, The Upshaws. But this is a guest you've been dying to have on. We moved the schedule. You did your own prep because we had four episodes taping last week. Why do you love LaWanda so much?
Because she's just been consistently a good comic. There's a lot of people that sort of pop up and get well known. And I like most comics, I'll be honest. I really do. I like all kinds of different comics. And
some of them would surprise you. I like even sort of politically incorrect comics. I like right-wing comics. They're funny. I like humor. And I think this is an area that's really been trying to figure out how to speak to the audience. And she doesn't go into sort of meanness, which I really appreciate. She doesn't need to dunk constantly in the way a lot of male comics do, male white comics especially. And she
has to dunk specific people.
Yes, exactly. She doesn't slap down. She slaps up, which I really appreciate. And again, she's a very powerful comic in the pantheon of comics. And there's not that many who's a woman, who's a person of color, and a lesbian.
I filmed her years ago at a People's State of the Union, and she was smacking up to Trump at the time.
Yeah.
I think the idea was like kind of dump Trump was the whole event.
Yeah.
And she has a sense of humor. It's very dry, almost wry.
Mm-hmm. And accessible.
And she was exhausted by Trump already. That must have been 2018, 2019. So I was very keen to hear her and how exhausted she would be by now.
Right. Well, she's a touring comedian. And so she's been on the road forever, and it's part of her job and something she does. And it sort of changed a little bit during the pandemic. And she was trying to find humor in that. And she has pandemic jokes. She's got political jokes.
She calls out Dave Chappelle.
She gave Dave Chappelle a hard time, which he's much deserved.
All right. Well, let's get to the interview. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with Wanda Sykes.
Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration for teams to accomplish what could otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually, we're great, but together, we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of two, 200, or 2 million, or whether your team is around the corner or on another continent altogether, Atlassian software is built to keep you all on the same page from start to finish. That way, every one of your teams, from engineering and IT to marketing, HR, and legal, can stay connected and moving together as one towards shared company-wide goals. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Incorporating AI into your business can be a delicate balance between speed and intelligence. That's why you might want to consider the Claude 3 family models from Anthropic for your enterprise AI. Haiku is their light and fast model, Opus is their most powerful model capable of high-order thinking, and Sonnet is the best combination of both speed and intelligence. Join the thousands of enterprises who use Anthropic to navigate this new frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude, Claude, today. Jumpstart your genius with Claude 3 by Anthropic.
It is on.
Welcome, Wanda.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Let's start with a new show and how you made it. This is your first show since the pandemic, and you piled on some very serious topics. Talk a little bit about the conceptual idea behind the show.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the pandemic was bizarre. I mean, you know, it was this time that we were going through and being locked down with, you know, the closest people to you. Yeah, you're locked down with them. And then all these things just were happening, you know, with Black Lives Matter and with Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd. And I'm in the house with white people who I love with all my being.
One of them you're married to, and the other your children.
Yeah, married, and my children. I give my life, you know, for them. But I'm in the house, stuck with them, and I'm having all these feelings and this anger, and just looking around like, what don't you get, and what can you say to help fix this? And they're looking at me for answers, like want me to explain what was going on, where I'm like, it's, you know, this is like asking the victim, why did they get smacked, you know? Mm-hmm. So I knew, you know, the stage is where I go to work things out, not just for comedy, but also just for my peace of mind.
Your mental.
It's my therapy. Yeah, it's cathartic.
But you weren't able to do that during COVID either. You weren't saved up.
Exactly.
How did you get it to funny?
Well, getting it to funny, I guess it was stepping outside of it and looking at my situation that I was in. It was like, mm-hmm. oh my God, all this is going on and I'm in the house with white people. You know, it's mm-hmm. and so it starts there.
So one of the things you talked about, trans issues, was a big focus, which I appreciated. You called out Dave Chappelle, as I did and many did, but it seems to have just gotten worse. Talk a little bit about why you wanted to put this in the show. And actually, it's even more pertinent now. I know, I'm not sure when you taped this, but it's gotten worse and worse.
Right, right. I mean, it's such a community that I don't understand why even attack, why they mm-hmm. why attack them. These are people who just want to live their lives in the body that they feel that they should be in. Or I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's just bizarre to me why that bothers you. I don't understand how that affects your life, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, thank God we have trans people who are out in the public and, you know, lending their voices and being a voice for their community. But you have people who, you know, trans people who are just in, you know, Milwaukee somewhere, and they, mm-hmm. they don't want all the attention and everything. They just want to live their lives, right?
Right, right.
So they don't understand that when they make these jokes, they think they're going after, like...
Why do you think they do? It's not just Dave Chappelle. It's Ricky right. Gervais. There's a lot of people that do it. Elon Musk does it, does all kinds of anti-trans stuff, despite having a trans child.
I don't know. I'm saying I really don't know. I mean, it's hateful. It's just hate. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't understand why do you want to make someone else's life harder than it is? I mean, mm-hmm. this is already rough.
Right.
But why put that on someone else and put them in danger? And I know they say it's words, but words matter. And, mm-hmm. and people are dying from this, especially Black trans women, mm-hmm. huge targets. Mm-hmm. I mean, and honestly, I don't get it. I really don't.
One of the things I wrote about was you can talk about anything you want as a comic, obviously, and I think you probably back that. But I always kept going, why an hour on it? Why an hour on it versus like a minute, right? Like he had one kind of okay lesbian joke and a couple of others, but an hour. And I was like, gosh, that's a lot. That's to attack someone.
And you know what's so sad is it's...
Brilliant guy.
Exactly.
Right.
He's brilliant. He's so funny. I still go back and watch the Killing Them Softly. I mean, he's mm-hmm. a really funny storyteller. I just don't understand, like you said, why a whole hour.
So let's play one that you have, which I thought was a perfect joke about the laws around kids at drag shows in places like Arkansas. Let's play that clip.
These kids know, man. And now they're trying to go backwards, right? Florida, don't say gay ban. What the hell, right? Tennessee, no kids can go to the drag shows. Because, like, that was a problem in the first place. Oh, I can't tell you how many drag shows I've been to. And everybody's up in arms because they ran out of high chairs and booster seats. What the fuck is wrong with them?
And then I'm going to play a second clip. This is about book banning versus assault weapons. Let's play that clip, too.
They're banning books in Texas, banning books. But we're protecting the kids. Well, if you really want to protect the kids, ban assault weapons. That's what's killing the kids, not the books. Until a drag queen walks into a school and beats 8 kids to death with a copy of To Kill a Mockingbird, I think you're focusing on the wrong shit.
Can you talk about how you crafted this joke? Because you brought a lot of things in. You have book bans, assault weapons, drag queens, and To Kill a Mockingbird, which is always a good thing. Talk about why you did it this way. I thought it worked perfectly.
It's common sense. I mean, I think that's the nut of my comedy, is just cut through everything and, like, it's just common sense, y'all. This is what it is. And also to point out the hypocrisy and, you know, and just and what we do and what people, how they're thinking. Is mm-hmm. like back to the drag shows or the story hour, you know, drag queens can't read to children. I'm like, what? First of all, they're in a library, a public library, reading. And, you know, it's like if it's going to confuse the kids. And like I said before, it's like if the kids can get, you know, Snuffleupagus, you know, I think they'll understand what a drag queen is. You know,
right.
It's just common sense to me. And it seems like people just go out of their way to make life harder for people who aren't even in their world.
Right.
You know, like drag queens aren't like just out in Target, you know, shopping. No. And you're going to run and encounter one.
Well, if you're in the Castro where my kids grew up.
Okay, maybe in the Castro.
Yes, you do.
In the Castro.
Yes,
and in the Village, maybe. Yeah. But, you know. Yes, I just don't understand how people go outside of their world to mess with people who, like I said, they would have nothing to do with. Never even an encounter. So,
Yeah. Why do you think it's gained ground? Because a lot of this stuff has gained ground, whether it's racism, homophobia, anti-trans.
Because that's all the right has to offer. They're not offering any policies, you know, except to
ban drag queen shows, except
that's their policies. Mm-hmm. Really, how is that putting food on your table? How is that, you know, making housing more available and affordable? How is that helping the environment? Okay, maybe less hairspray with the drag queens. I don't know. But, I mean, how is that helping? That's the only thing that they have. That's the only flag that they can raise is and to rile up their fan base, you know, their voters, is to just go after, just on the attack and make up shit. Like, this is what's hurting us. I mean, it's insane.
And one of the things they've tended to focus on is racial issues now.
Oh yes.
There was just a Washington Post survey of Black Americans saying they felt they were better off, but were more scared than ever, which I thought was an interesting juxtaposition. That financially, they feel better, but they feel much more in danger and exposed to white supremacy and everything else right now. Can you talk about how you think about talking about racism in your show? And you cover racial issues from George Floyd to Ahmaud Arbery. When you are touching on these hot button issues, do you worry at all from a comic point of view, or do you think this is what people expect you to do to sort of hit all these very thorny issues for people?
Be honest with you, I get a little tingly up there when I'm, you know, speaking on these issues.
Meaning tingly how?
Like your little spidey senses going on.
What are you worried about?
Hecklers, not so much. I can take care of a heckler. But it's like, what if somebody decides to take it to that next level, you know? But, you know, I have great security. I have amazing fans. Mm-hmm. Like, my audience that show up, they're just, I mean, they really are, they're the best. And as far as hecklers, they've taken care of hecklers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if someone shouts something, you should hear how they just jump on them before I can even get to them.
I assume you have a great number of lesbians in the audience for that would handle
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah, lesbians ain't, we're not playing around. So I'm not as concerned.
Do you cut back at all on things, especially around racial issues, especially with white supremacy gaining? Like, it's out in the open right now in a way that it never has been. And all these polls are showing people are very nervous about their own lives. I know as a gay person, I'm much more nervous than I was since the 80s. Like, honestly.
Isn't that crazy?
It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
And so when you think about that, does that make you pull back?
I don't pull back, but let's just say because I want to say what I need to say and what I want to say, but maybe the way I phrase it, you know, like the joke I did about I have a friend who won't get vaccinated, which is true.
No, I got a friend who still hasn't been vaccinated. No, she won't get vaccinated. And she's laughing at me. She's like, look at you. You don't know what's in that mess. You just put that mess in your arm. You don't know what's in it. I was like, yeah, I don't know what's in it. And if they told me what was in it, I still wouldn't know what was in it. I'm not a scientist, jackass. But they laugh at me. They laugh at me. And so I was like, well, I just don't put anything in my body. I'm like, you use Splenda. Shut the fuck up.
I used to tell that joke where it was a more of attack of, like, I can't believe I have a friend won't get vaccinated. And she's like, well, I don't know what's in it. And I was like, well, if they told you what was in it, you still wouldn't know, you jackass,
right,
you know?
Right.
But I said, you know what? I understand there's people out there who, because I want them to get the joke. So I was like, maybe it'll go over better if I put it on me, where I'm the one who says, yeah, I don't know what, you know. So it's that type of thing. I, you know, it's more of the massaging jokes where I still get my point across, but you don't have to be in their face. I don't have to punch them first.
Do you ever feel like you should push harder even? Because things have gotten worse, like a lot worse. And I can't imagine being a comic and not being angry on stage. But that's a mistake, presumably.
Mm-hmm. And I've had shows like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've had shows where I was just angry and I had to take a step, like really take a step back and breathe. And like I said, that's why I love my audience. And they'll just applaud, like, come on, you know. And then I talk about something silly and I'm good. Mm-hmm. But that's when I know, okay, that joke's not ready because it's making me too angry, you know. I'm really worried about this whole Trump thing. I'm worried. I mean, good Lord.
Yep. He keeps rising to the top like styrofoam, orange styrofoam. Talk about Trump, how you feel about you. You didn't have a lot of Trump in here.
No, not normal. I did a lot of Trump. That was the special before this one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, this special, I couldn't find the, you know, what was so funny. And two, I want to stop talking about him. I want him to go away, you know? I wanted to hit on subjects with him removed. And so, like, guys, let's just get back to these issues and not even talk about him. Let's not connect him. Let's not blame him that you know, this is why we're here. Let's just say this is where we're at and let's talk about it, you know?
Do you feel like you should be talking about Trump now when you're thinking about what you're doing? He's hard to leave out, and at the same time, you don't want to talk about him. So what do you do as a comic?
Now, I mean, now he's back. We have to talk about him now. I mean, he's, you know, he's been indicted again. We have to talk about him.
Is he a good attack venue for your comedy? Or is it just you don't find it funny anymore?
It's not funny.
Yeah.
It's just not. And there's nothing that you can say that he won't outdo you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a parody of a parody. So to me, it's more about the voters and the people following him than him. Because there's nothing you're going to say about him that's going to sway them. You know, I used to work at NSA before I started doing stand-up.
Yes, I'm going to get into that in a minute, yeah.
But no, when he was first running, I said, how can he even run? I mean, I know the Constitution allows it, but I was like, this dude will never get a security clearance.
Mm-hmm.
You can't trust him with secrets. He's already compromised. Mm-hmm. He owes a shitload of money to China, and then he's in bed with the Saudis. I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way this guy can become president. And it happened.
And it happened.
And here we are. And he walked off with a bunch of top secret documents.
You were a national security staffer at the NSA.
I worked at NSA, yeah.
What did you do there?
Basically, I bought stuff. I was a contracting specialist.
Mm-hmm.
But I would buy a lot, I mean, a like, range of
like what? Like
things.
Spy gear? Or
anywhere from furniture to Yeah, spy gear.
Spy gear. But you didn't, you weren't a spy, right?
No, I wasn't a cryptologist or anything or a spy, no.
Why did
no.
you go there?
Because I lived in the area, basically.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, when you grow up in the Maryland, D.C. area, you, mm-hmm. you end up working for the government or government contractor. But also, it was the way of for me to serve my country. My father was a retired colonel. My mm-hmm. my brother, he also served. Mm-hmm. You know, my mom, she worked at the credit union there at NSA. So it was like, you know, a family thing.
You got top security clearance, though, correct?
Yeah, like you I had one above top secret.
Wow. Okay. You could be Trump's lawyer now, by the way, just so you know.
yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on the indictment right now?
I'm nervous that it's in Florida, and I'm nervous about this, the judge.
One of the things that I get nervous about, as I said, is being gay right now and having children and things like that. I'm just curious. Let's talk a little bit about that in your family. Why did you wait until 44 in 2008 to come out? I know it was hard with your parents, I assume due to religion.
Right.
Was that the issue?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They are what? What is their faith?
We're Baptists.
Baptist. Oh, are yeah. they Southern Baptist?
No. Just that's regular just old Baptist. Regular old Black Baptist. Yeah.
So why did you wait so long? Was it working at the NSA? Was it? I didn't go into the military or the CIA because I was gay, because I didn't want to not be out.
Okay.
And that was an issue at the time. Was there any reason why?
Why
you waited till 44?
To come out?
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't NSA, because I left NSA back in, I want to say, 93, 94, something like that. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I knew when I was young, and then kind of like put that away and said, okay, I'm living my life as a straight woman.
Yeah, you had
woman.
That friend. You talked
yeah.
about a friend. Yeah. We all have that friend.
Yeah. So I just lived my life as a straight woman, you know, tried marriage and to a man that didn't work. And, it just, after the marriage, it just hit me like, what is happening? How come all my relationships only go to a certain point and mm-hmm. I can't, you know, really get any deeper? Like, I've had so many people say, it feels like if I just walked out, you wouldn't give a damn. And I was like, mm-hmm. That's probably, that's bingo. That's it, you know.
I've had people say that to me before.
Yeah. So, and then it hit me that, oh, okay, I forgot about all these other feelings. And, mm-hmm. and you know, this is what I'm doing right now. I'm just playing a role. I'm, you know, Wanda mm-hmm. Sykes in the role of a straight woman, right? Mm-hmm. So it was easy when it was over, just cut, move on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. But who I really am, I figured it out, like, oh, through therapy and all and mm-hmm. talking it out, I said, I'm a gay woman. I'm a lesbian. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a couple of relationships. But when I met Alex, it was just like, just deeper. Mm-hmm. I've never, you know, had feelings like that. I never, like, just understood someone and just felt seen and understood. And and of course, that's when, because at first I said, I never want to have kids. But that's when mm-hmm. being with her made me go, oh, and she definitely wanted kids. Mm-hmm. And it just made sense to me. Like, of course I want to raise a family with you. Mm-hmm. Well, of course.
And you have two kids, twins, yeah. who are mm-hmm. 14. Personally, I think lesbians make ideal parents, especially for boys. I think they should raise all the boys. Mm-hmm. I have three and just one daughter. But when you met her, she's French, as you say. She's such a part of your act. Talk about the dynamic of bringing your personal life, including being gay, into your act. How difficult was that? And I suppose the answer is I'm an entertainer, so anything is fair game.
The gay part, that was, you know, that was easy to bring into the act, because by then, you know, we were married and Prop 8 passed in California. you know, so that made it pretty easy to come out because I had to speak up. You know, something that I mm-hmm. had was trying to be, was about to be taken away from
did
me.
Did you have your kids then? I suppose
no,
you did.
No, no, but oh. but Alex was pregnant when we got married, like a mm-hmm. like maybe 2 months.
Mm-hmm. I know about the anger. My kid looked at me and said, are we not a family anymore after
wow.
campaign? And Obama had just won, so there was a lot of happiness about that. And then that, right, and we lived in California. Mm-hmm. So it was easy to do it on stage, to talk about it.
Yeah.
Out of anger.
Yes.
What was the reaction to people from your perspective? Was there any difficulty or not at all? It seems like you did it flawlessly and seamlessly.
Exactly. You know, and I get asked, when you came out, did you lose fans? Did you lose this? I don't know. I probably did, but I gained so many more, you know? And work-wise, I don't know. I mean, it's whatever roles I didn't get or people, you know, don't want to work with me or whatever because of the mm-hmm. gay. I've had so many more, you know, offers. So it's like, I don't know. I can't even answer that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think so. People like lesbians more, I think. I think
they
like you better. It's true.
Support for On with Kara Swisher comes from Babbel. Our phones have gotten pretty good at translating speech on the fly. If you're traveling to a new country and you'd like to order a chicken sandwich with pickles, an app will probably see you through. But what if you want to chat with your server about the neighborhood or other dishes on the menu or your love of pickles? Real conversations with real people don't lend themselves to translation apps. Genuine connection requires a genuine grasp of the language, and that's something Babbel can offer. Babbel is a science-backed language learning app with lessons created by real people for real conversations. Babbel doesn't rely on artificial intelligence to build its 10-minute lessons. Instead, they're handcrafted by more than 200 language experts focused on teaching phrases and vocabulary you'll actually need to communicate. I really like it. I'm using Babbel, and I've been able to use it here in Argentina, where I'm visiting my son, Louis. It's a really efficient way to learn a language. I do them very quick. It's 10 minutes. It's very user-friendly. Lots of pictures. I was never good at languages, and I'm really enjoying using the Babbel app. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/swisher. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/swisher, spelled BABBEL.com/swisher. And you know how to spell that. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Support for this show comes from the Harvard Business Review. I made a career out of taking to task some of the tech industry's biggest players. And honestly, some of these guys, and they're all guys, really had no clue what they were doing, and they could probably have benefited from some of the resources available at Harvard Business Review. Harvard Business Review is a top source for smart management thinkers. Cultivated by some of the greatest minds in business, the Harvard Business Review is a trove of rigorous insight and best practices. It's more than just a flagship magazine, too. You can find the same level of expertise on hbr.org, and for just $10 a month, a subscription unlocks unlimited access to a variety of resources like hundreds of articles, podcasts, newsletters, case studies, and so much more. I use HBR all the time to look up all kinds of cases, and not just in tech, and also listen to their podcasts. I look at their newsletters, and I really, 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 most of all, like the articles, which have a different perspective that I might have to give me ideas. While much of Harvard Business Review's content is available for free after signing up at their site, subscriptions to unlimited content start at only $10 a month. Go to hbr.org/subscriptions and enter the promo code Kara right now to get 10% off your subscription. Again, to save 10% off your HBR subscription, go to hbr.org/subscriptions and enter the promo code Kara.
One of the things you do talk about is this issue of woke, which never goes away. It's the new version of politically incorrect or politically correct, really. And you said the whole complaint about cancel culture is a lot of men, especially straight men, and I would say straight white men, I would add that to it, are just pissed off. They can't say anything anymore. And you also note it's not like you can't say these things, you can say them, now there's consequence. So that's why I say I can't get canceled, only God can say, all right, Wanda, that's enough. But you've taken a stance here in a very strong way. You left the Roseanne reboot after her incredibly horrific statements about Valerie Jarrett. Talk about that idea of sort of defending woke.
I hate that there's even, a title that we're calling it something. It should just be, just trying to be better. just being more, inclusive and just seeing that, hey, we all should be represented and we all deserve the same things. I mean, it's crazy that, like I say, evolving is now a bad thing.
A lot of comedy rests on that, though, on people being angry about cancel culture, being canceled. In comedy, especially, they're mad if they get shoved out of something or not able to say what they want to say.
But like I said, you can say what you want to say, but maybe, you might lose some audience. Maybe you might gain some audience. I don't, to me, you're canceled when you say, hey, I'm going to be here at, on June 3rd or whatever, and nobody shows up. Okay, now you know. Mm-hmm. But, you go perform someplace else, and maybe people will show up. If they don't show up, then you're canceled.
Who do you think your audience is? I mean, who's your platonic person who you want to appeal to? Is there anybody or not?
When I think about it, it's not like a demographic that I'm going after. Mm-hmm. I just like people who are just open-minded and just loving people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So would you mind performing in front of conservative audiences? Do you think you have a conservative base?
I said loving people.
Loving people. Okay.
Yes.
So, okay. All right. I see your point. One of the things you didn't cover also, by the way, was Roe v. Wade. Did you come up with a good joke yet? You said you couldn't come up with one. Is there one?
I mentioned it at the top of the show, how things are awful and Roe v. Wade was overturned. But I can't.
You still can't.
Can't find it funny.
Can't find it funny. Another thing that's not funny is the writer's strike. Talk a little bit about that and the issues for you. I know you can't appear in certain things. You certainly have some series. Where are you in that? Because comedy is a little different, but still an issue as you move forward.
Yeah. We had two more episodes to shoot of The Upshaws, mm-hmm. For Netflix. We shut down. This is the most important, moment, I think, for our careers and just for the craft of writing and how we create not just TV and, film, but this is the line in the sand with mm-hmm. AI and all. And even for actors, how AI is just, can create and use, images and it's taken the ownership and power away from writers and performers.
You wouldn't want a Wanda AI? They could input all your stuff and you couldn't. No? No?
No.
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 Where do you think the strike's going to come out? Because I think they'll say AI is not quite there yet, so we're not going to negotiate on
it. Well, that's the same crap they told us when we were going after, DVD and on demand, mm-hmm. The last strike. No, that's not, we don't know where that's going. You mm-hmm. absolutely know where it's going. People are using it to, write their papers, their speeches. Mm-hmm. I mean, it'll be where the producers, they'll just say, give me a script about this. And then they'll just hire writers to do, punch up or whatever to make it sound, like an actual human wrote it. Mm-hmm. And now we don't, there's no ownership to it. So
where do you think it's going to resolve? Because the actors may go out on strike. You're both.
I'm both unions. Yeah. And I voted yes for both.
So what is the thing you want most from this? Is it the writers' rooms? Is it AI? Is it all of it? Because this doesn't seem like the studios are budging at this point.
We have to have the rooms, maintain the size of the rooms, stop it with mm-hmm. these little small rooms. Actors, and all residuals back. We need for the streamers to be accountable and transparent. I mean, because, they can just tell you anything. And mm-hmm. and that's pretty much what happens with Netflix. They'll say, X amount of people watch this. And but there's no data to back it up. We have nothing. Mm-hmm. And also what I hope is for the networks to break off from the streamers, because I believe we can get a deal with the networks.
Mm-hmm.
I believe we can do a deal with them, a deal that, you know, that we'll be happy with.
Mm-hmm.
And let the streamers do their own thing. And hey, we'll go back.
Although sometimes the networks are the streamers, right? They
but
now.
But that's their deal. But I think NBC, we'll have a deal with NBC and Peacock. That's the streamer. That's separate.
You've been operating. You're on Netflix. You're on lots of things. How do you look at the changing entertainment environment, aside from the strike, which these are major issues, the rooms, the AI, residuals, et cetera? Everything's changed in terms of economics.
Mm-hmm.
How do you look at it? How have you seen it?
Well, I see it where, you know, it's like you like the freedom. You like mm-hmm. the creative freedom at like a Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't bother us much.
Mm-hmm.
You like that. You know, it's Netflix. It's sexy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But financially, it's better with the networks as mm-hmm. far as with residuals, and especially for I'm at a level where, hey, I'm not complaining.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at the younger writers and, mm-hmm. and actors who are just starting. There's a lot of issues that, you know, we can't back down. We have to get these things because that's how they're going to survive.
When you think about that, you know, it's changed so drastically in general. But one of the things that sort of hangs over all your heads are you go over to TikTok and there's a million creators, 1% mm-hmm. of whom are excellent, like not just good, really high level. Does that worry you where you see all that, where comics, like just talk about comedy. I mean, you can see it in lots of different ways, dancing and singing and things like that. But is that a worry to comics like that, where you see a lot of people breaking on these social networks, especially TikTok? I would say, or Instagram, maybe.
I think it's great. You know, it's just a matter of how you're training, and it's because at the end of the day, we're doing the same thing, right? We're mm-hmm. we're saying something, and it's getting to a viewer. We're providing content. I just happened to grow up in a system where, you know, you went to the comedy clubs, and you know, people liked the live performance, and that's how I built my, you know, built my career. But I don't diss anyone who's taken the approach where they're, instead of going through the comedy clubs, they're doing it, you know, through social media, and they're getting an audience. You know, good for them.
Is that system of yours where you went to the comedy clubs and you got a special, and then you know, you might have gotten a show, et cetera? Is that over from your perspective, or does it still work?
No, there's still comics doing the same, you know, going through that, mm-hmm. and the audience is still there. The audience still, there's people who just want to go see a live show.
A live show.
Know? Yeah.
So is that your favorite part of it right now or
absolutely.
Not? Absolutely. Being on the road or going to do live shows?
Doing live shows. It's the most challenging and part, and it's, you know.
Is it raining there? Is that raining?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah,
that's okay. I love it.
I mean, I didn't make the rain. I'm not apologizing for the rain. It's the woman in me, you know. I'm sorry. I made it rain. I'm sorry. Oh my God, is that thunder? Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to make it thunder. I'm sorry.
It's your fault, all of it.
It's always my fault. I'm so sorry. That's the thing I'm trying to break my daughter from. It's
yeah.
Like she keeps apologizing for everything.
I bumped into her. Mine does not at all.
Oh, I bumped into her. Oh, I'm sorry. I said, I bumped into you. Stop it. Stop saying you're sorry for stuff.
Yep. My daughter doesn't apologize.
Yeah.
We're good with her. So let me ask you two more questions. Are you on the new season of Curb, your enthusiasm? I hope so.
I am not.
Oh, why
I am not?
Your relationship with Larry is near perfect.
I miss it. It's almost like I want to go, hey, can you call over to Curb and tell Larry, come on, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah. That must have been an amazing experience. You guys were perfect. My
I
favorite
loved it.
Pair.
Yeah. Loved it.
But you did a great job on The Daily Show, too. I was just watching all the clips from your week there. Do you want that job? Is that something you're interested in? I asked this of Roy Wood, who was on earlier.
Oh, I love Roy.
Mm-hmm.
Roy is great. I love Roy. Do I want the job? I'm not going to say I... No, I hate to say no, I don't want the job, because maybe I'm supposed to have that job. I don't know.
It would be nice if a woman and a woman of color had it. That would be great.
Maybe that's where I'm supposed to be. I have no idea. But I am not, you know, lobbying or, you know, I'm not going after that job. I don't know if that job works for my family right now or for me. I don't know.
Can I ask you who you think is funny right now? Is there one thing you just saw recently you're like, oh, that's really fucking funny?
Oh, jeez. What makes me laugh? You know what? Abbott Elementary makes my day.
Ah.
Abbott Elementary.
Why?
It's just a nice, pleasant, funny half hour of good TV.
Mm-hmm.
I love the characters. And they're able to do it, you know, where it's sweet, but not mm-hmm. like saccharine. It's not just... You know, you enjoy it.
It's not cynical either. It's not too mean.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I love that.
All right. Wanda, thank you so much. You're
thank
a wonderful
you.
Comic. I'm an enormous fan for decades, for absolute decades. And I really appreciate it.
That rain that came in. She's apologizing for the rain.
I know. She's funny. It was a lot of rain.
She's trying to share with you that her child, you know, is apologizing too much. And you're like, my child is perfect. No apologies for my child.
Well, I'm trying to get her. She does wine for ice cream here in France. Suddenly she's become an addict for French ice cream, which is on every corner. So,
well, that's nothing to apologize for.
Yeah.
She's like made for the French Riviera, your daughter, by the way.
She is. She's looking good. She's wearing the dresses. She's posing all over the place. She's making friends. I left her right now dancing in the middle of a square, eating ice cream and dancing with the band, which was
excellent.
Yeah.
By herself or chaperone?
By herself. She was dancing.
But she's not by herself. Amanda is with
her.
Yes.
Yes. We leave her there. It's France. I gave her a cigarette, a bottle of wine, and she's on her own. She'll get herself home. Get yourself home, sweetie. 3 years old. Yeah, that's the plan.
That's the plan. I liked Wanda. She seemed a little reserved in that interview.
She is. She was very... I think she must be exhausted, you know what I mean, in some way. But I think one of the things about comics is when they're on, they're on. When they're not, they're often quite quiet as they're thinking about their act and how they want to present it. And just even being here for a short time, because we have a lot of fans, both Pivot and On fans, and getting like constant attention and I like your show and this and that is exhausting. And I'm not famous. I'm famous at Con Lions, but nowhere else. Maybe South by Southwest. But
you're conference famous.
I'm conference. Well, no, it's full of these people here. But it's really, I think it must be the incoming for someone like her must be quite substantive. And so I think probably they shut down a little bit.
Yeah. As media kind of think about the Trump return and what that means for coverage. She seemed to be thinking about that for comedy and thinking, well, it's not even funny anymore. And I appreciated her point, which is that everything you do, he will outdo you.
Yes. You can't make a joke anymore. It's moved beyond joke. It's surreal. Like you can't, it's not funny anymore, but what are you going to do? There he is like oxygen. And so I think it's going to be very hard for comics coming forward, though he provides enormous ample material like that recent interview with Bret Baier.
Oh, yes.
Where he just is so crazy. And then you're like, what? Huh? And after a while, one, you get tired of talking about him. And two, it's not funny. And three, making fun of it seems to diminish the importance of not making fun of it. So I think it's hard. Comics are going to have a hard time going forward.
And also, he likes to be in on the joke or use the joke to his advantage. And he's a kind of mastermind at that. And we saw that when Caitlin Collins asked him, you know, his flip-flop on the debt ceiling.
Yeah.
And says, why were you, you know, for raising the debt ceiling when you were president and not now? And his response is, well, I was president then and I'm not now. And that's the difference. Ha ha. And, you know, that's the power he has.
Well, that's the thing. He's not, you can't make fun of him because he makes fun of himself in a weird way. I think it's going to be really interesting. I mean, if you remember the first term, it's all the, you know, Alec Baldwin dressing as Trump and it's all fun and games. But since the insurrection, I think that really knocked the stuffing out of a lot of people. And I think it's, if you were a comic to try to make Trump jokes, it's going to be hard. A lot of political jokes, because so much of it is so ugly. I'll be interested to see how they do it. Right?
Yeah.
And there's not so many great jokes about fascism, right? Oh, that Mussolini would have cut up. You know,
too soon.
Too Kara. Soon. It's still too soon. It's still too soon.
You know, I really appreciated her point on race. The genesis of her whole project came from having to explain this almost, right?
Yeah, and right. To her family, to her white family.
To her white family, exactly. Right. And the analogy she used, it's like asking the victim, why did you get smacked? Which I thought was spot on.
Was spot on. You don't want to compare it to being gay, but I remember having to explain things to my family, and I was like, why do I have to explain it to these idiots? You know what I mean? Like, it was interesting. And in her case, obviously, it was at the same time that the pandemic was happening. You had George Floyd, you had Ahmaud Arbery. You had so many different incidents, and yeah. you had no one to talk to, and you couldn't express yourself. You couldn't be on the road where she may have worked this stuff out.
Right.
Was hard for her. And I thought that was a really prescient thing to think about when she was working on it.
I thought so, too. And I appreciated that she was honest about getting, I can't remember if she used the word tingled or something, that she started, you know, she felt a certain way. I felt that at parts in the interview. It's like having to explain it and then having to explain how you treat her. It's a really hard thing to work around. And I think she did a beautiful job of it, really.
She did. She did.
But anyway, she wasn't giving an inch to conservatives.
No.
She's like, what did she say when you asked her, does she imagine that she is conservative audiences, and she's like, I said open-minded or like kind-hearted or generous.
She doesn't.
People.
She's not interested. I like a gal like that. I like a gal who punches him right in the nose.
By the way, you pressed her a lot on kind of why she came out later in age. I was curious, why were you so curious about that?
I just am always interested when people come out at a later age. I'm sort of, especially after AIDS, right? That was the 80s. That's, you know, I felt like, wow, it's how do you not come out in this day and age, including back then, because of all the different political issues? I just was like, why would you do it? And obviously, there's her parents, there's religion, there's all kinds of things pressing on anybody, any one person. So.
And her answer was that she didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think is fair. Maybe I'm going to one day find out.
No, Naeem.
No.
No. I'm going to give you that complete answer. No.
You once called me the straightest person you've ever met.
Well, yeah, except this one gay couple who live in Los Angeles. They're the straightest people I know.
All right. You want to read us out?
Sure. From the French Riviera, today's show was produced by Naeem Araza, Blakeney Schick, Christian Castro-Rossell, and Megan Burney. Special thanks to Kate Gallagher. Fernando Aruda engineered this episode, and our theme music is by Trackademics. If you're already following the show, you get a flute lesson from Lizzo, and boy, are you lucky. If not, Wanda Sykes' fan base is coming after you, and it's a lot of armed lesbians. Go wherever you listen to podcasts, search for On with Kara Swisher, and hit follow. Thanks for listening to On with Kara Swisher from New York Magazine, the Vox Media Podcast Network, and us. We'll be back on Thursday with more.
Claude 3 from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point of the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skill and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who use Anthropic to navigate this new frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude, C-L-A-U-D-E, today. Jumpstart your genius with Claude 3 by Anthropic.
First thing in the morning, as soon as you wake up, the to-do list starts.
Does the car need gas? Hopefully those leftovers are still good.
Why did I get CC'd on
Mom?
No.
You can't escape the to-do list, but you can make the most of your me time with a relaxing shower using Method hair care products. Try Pure Peace Volumizing, Simply Nourish Moisturizing, or Daily Zen Shampoo and Conditioner for daily use. All formulated with long-lasting fragrances and are safe for color-treated hair. Reconnect with the best version of yourself. Visit methodproducts.com to unleash your inner shower.